Hey everybody, it's Barry here again and from Turning the Page, and I'd just like to say thank you for joining me again for another riveting episode of Turning the Page! Yes, it's me, back again, crazy man from New Zealand. But anyway, let's get on to the topic. When there are more questions than answers! Okay, now that I haven't got your attention... You know, when Bob climbed into the passenger seat next to me, I could see something was wrong. Like, he wasn't his normal cheery self. It was like, you know, how a question had just was gripping his thinking. You know, you could see it just over his face, like he was just pondering around and around and around. Have you ever had that experience? Like, something has happened in your life and, like, with a sense of shock, and you're just totally and utterly consumed by trying to understand it. You know, I've got many questions. And if you've lived for a few years, you will most likely have a closet full of questions. And it's that place where you store away those questions that haven't been answered yet, or maybe they have been answered, but just not to your full satisfaction, like there's still something missing. You know, I'm talking about questions of the heart. And perhaps the answer that was given was a bit glib. You know what I mean? Look, oh, yeah, okay. You know, it's a nice, pretty, sterilized Band-Aid used to avoid exposure to the rawness of the pain. You know, few of us generally want to hear the rawness of another person's pain. We don't even want to go near our own. But the older I get, and I find that I have many questions and few answers. The other day, I was listening to the Daily Audio Bible, which is a podcast I'd highly recommend, actually. It's very good. And they've been going through Job and Ecclesiastes. Now, those two books, they inspire joy and overflowing positivity, don't they? Not. But Job sits in torn clothes and a pit of ashes, and his world has been thrown upside down and absolutely shaken to its core. But why? He questions everything, especially God. His so-called friends question him and tell him their less than helpful answers. And then we go to the writer of Ecclesiastes, and he seems to be stuck in a pit of hopelessness. You know, he says, this is the second verse in the book. He says, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. How's that for a good sales pitch? But I've got a God that questions my questions. And one of the delights of the book of Job, and there's not many, is how God responds to Job and his friends. Job asks questions and God responds with questions. And the questions God asked Job to answer were of a nature that no man could answer. Put in the box and say, there, I have the answer. Nobody could do it. And so you know, when God starts to responding to Job, he says this, I have some questions for you, Job, and I want some straight answers. Yeah, come on, you tell me those straight answers. Where were you when I created the earth? Tell me, since you know so much, who decided on its size? Certainly you'll know that. And who came up with the blueprints and measurements? And how was its foundation poured? Who set the cornerstone while the morning stars sang in chorus and all the angels shouted praise? That's in Job 38. And you see Job going, I'm not sure about that one. Look, Job is cognitively invited to see his questions in the context of something much bigger than himself, that there is a larger story going on, and we and him are invited to be part of it. You don't have to have the answers to gain the entry, to win the prize. Actually, those with the questions are more likely to hear the bigger God questions that truly matter and that actually shape and form one's wholeness. Look, every one of us will at some stage go through a Job experience. Look, it may not be as dramatic as Job's with the loss of family, wealth, and health, but we'll all taste the ashes of loss. You know, it could be the betrayal in a marriage or the death of a friend, the loss of a job or a crippling car accident. Perhaps it's cancer eating your body away or fire burning the house. There's a mill, a grindstone, a storm, and a place of fire that we all pass through, a place where everything seems meaningless and hopelessness. There's hopelessness. It's a time when you're invited to reassess all that you've believed in. Is God good? Am I loved? Do I have worth? Is it okay to change some of my beliefs? Perhaps the place that gave you the answer as a child no longer provides the answers for the fire-scorched adult that you are becoming. I was once pastorally coaching a man with a severe addiction problem. His wife had had enough and had told him the marriage was over. And he was in the fire of change and he didn't like the taste. He asked what he should do. So we talked about her past and how she had suffered abuse and needed a deep sense of security. The facts were that he was untrustworthy and an abuser of trust. We had to give her, via his observed behaviours, new factual evidence that he was doing things differently. So he became religious, in a good sense, of creating new habits. He did it for his own sake, and that if it restored his marriage, then that would be a bonus. He questioned his beliefs and didn't like the answers. We rebuilt his life, and the marriage was restored. Look, I want to listen to people with questions. I probably don't have the answers, but the joy is to see that they are actually questioning things. To just accept everything and go along in a trance of what others tell you shows little desire for growth or depth. That power contained in a good storm of fire will have left no maturing mark on you. You see, spiritual formation happens at the crossroads where there is a question. Do I explore the road less travelled, or do I take the familiar but old and less than satisfactory route? We need to, as Parker Palmer would say, hear each other into deeper speech. Mental health, you see, is exploring the questions for the questions that are underneath. Here's some quotes for you to consider. Learn to respond to others with honest, open questions instead of counsel or corrections. With such questions, we help each other hear each other into deeper speech. It's Parker Palmer. Another Parker Palmer is, when you seek to me about your deepest questions, you do not want to be fixed or saved. You want to be seen and heard, to have your truth acknowledged and honored. Good work is relational, and outcomes depend on what we are able to evoke from each other. Parker Palmer. And it's usually most helpful to ask questions that are more about the person than about the problem. Parker Palmer again. And the final one, there are questions which illuminate and there are those that destroy. We should ask the first kind. That's from Isaac Isidore Rabbi. Here's some questions for you. Do you have a closet full of questions? Ones that you have subconsciously stored away but now and then make their unwelcome appearance. What are those questions? Number two, under one question, there may well be another question or other questions. What is the question under the question that simply needs acknowledgement at being there? Final one is, what shapes us more, our questions or our answers? So I hope you found this helpful. There's a lot of questions in it. And if you'd like to email me, I really enjoy hearing from my readers and my listeners. And you can see that there's my email address right there, barry@turningthepage.co.nz. And send me some questions that you might have. I'd love to hear from you. And if you want to support what I'm doing, come over to turningthepage.co.nz/support and read more about how you can be part of my team. And just until next week, I do pray that you would find what are the questions that are really shaping your life and find someone who can actually listen to the questions and maybe help you explore them further. Okay, thanks, and we'll see you next week. Bye.